A Father's Influence. Latter-day Saints view parenthood as the highest and most sacred appointment from God to His children. And parents shall also teach their children to pray and to walk uprightly before the Lord. Doctrine and Covenants, section 68, verse 28. Among the traits effective parents need to develop are love, compassion, and sacrifice. Fathers traditionally and scripturally are charged with the care for the physical needs of the family. Doctrine and Covenants, section 75, verse 28, also section 83, verses 2 and 4, and provide priesthood leadership. They also love and guide their children. In so doing, they can become something much more than what is covered by the label of provider or leader. They become an integral part of the next generation. Following, three Latter-day Saints share memories of their fathers. Footballs and Fences by Robert Farrell. When I was a young child, I struggled with a speech impediment that required many hours of specialized training. In addition, I struggled both socially and academically. To make matters worse, I sprouted up quickly to become a tall, awkward fifth grader. My parents tried to give me experiences that would increase my self-confidence, but with little luck. I attempted piano lessons but soon quit. Soccer was quickly abandoned, and basketball was completely embarrassing. My father even resorted to asking a family friend, a former professional baseball player, to provide extra instruction to help me succeed in Little League. One night, after some tips from my personal trainer, I overheard him tell my dad that there was no hope. "Your son is too uncoordinated," he said. I was crushed. My parents continued to show great love for me over the years. However, I felt I was a tremendous disappointment to them and to myself. Partly as a result, I withdrew from the family and became an irritable teenager and started ninth grade with a cantankerous attitude. Succumbing to peer pressure, I tried out for the football team. While I had no hope of succeeding, I did not want to seem different from my friends. By then, I had learned a great deal about hard work. My speech impediment was barely noticeable, and my grades were improving. I committed to work hard to make the team, even if all I got to do was to sit on the bench. My parents were happy, but apprehensive. I quickly discovered I had some talent and was able to make first string as a defensive linebacker on the junior varsity team. Each year I improved. My perseverance was paying off. My dad was so proud of my accomplishments that he attended every game. He would come home early from business trips and reschedule meetings so that he could be there when I played. The cheerleaders knew him better than they knew me. He showed up frequently at my practices, and other players began teasing me about Coach Daddy. Deep inside, I was thrilled to see my father's love and approval, and I felt wonderful when I heard him cheering in the stands. In my junior year, I made first string on the varsity team, and my dad's excitement bubbled over. One day at practice, my dad showed up and asked the coach if there was anything I could work on at home. After practice, my coach harassed me in front of the team about my father. I was angry, and I went home to speak my mind. I stormed into the kitchen where my family was eating, and I told my dad that he was an embarrassment to me, and that if he ever showed up to my practice again, I would quit the team. As I walked away, I could see the hurt in his eyes. Weeks went by, and my dad was nowhere to be seen. I felt bad for having pushed him away. One day, after a small injury during practice, I was sitting on the field. I noticed a man standing about 75 yards away from the field, behind a fence, standing in the bushes. Looking closer, I realized it was my dad, who watched, unaware of my discovery. My heart broke, and I wondered how many times he had hidden to watch me practice. I knew then that my dad loved and cared about me more than anything else. From that moment on, something special began to grow between my dad and me. I let him into my life, and he helped steer me toward a mission. I was never able to really express my love and appreciation for my coach daddy because he passed away a few months after I returned home from my mission. He never knew about that day on the field when the door of my isolation was fully opened for good and my life changed. I've often thought about my father standing just out of sight, silently cheering me on, and it has helped me realize that in much the same way, Heavenly Father is also quietly watching, cheering me on through my life's challenges. Note, Robert Farrell serves as executive secretary in the Lincoln First Ward, Lincoln, Nebraska stake. End of note. Calmed by His Caring by Diana Bateman Parker. It would be a long time before my sister came to bed and begrudgingly let me snuggle up to her back to feel the protection of her closeness. For the past few weeks since we had moved to this upstairs room, there had been the only time I could let my eyes close, my fears fade, and sleep come. With all the passion of my small self, I wished to return to the tiny room downstairs that had been my haven for the first 9 years of my existence. In that tiny and cozy room off my mother's kitchen, I could hear adult voices talking and laughing. The warm fragrance of my mother's daily baking bread would come wafting into my room. How unfair to replace that comforting room with this one. I stared up at the purple walls on which bright moonbeams glaringly cast shadows of my grandfather's whorled and knotted cottonwood tree. I rolled over, trying in vain to blot the entire room from my mind, but my only reward was the creaking and groaning of the old-fashioned bedsprings. This room was dreadful. It was ugly, and it made me hate my great-grandfather for building this house, where my father had been born, even though I loved it so completely during the daylight hours. More squeaks from the springs. My hand made a dash for the bed lamp, but it seemed a long way from the warm protection of the quilt to the old light that my father had attached to the ancient iron bedstead. The light helped. Then I heard footsteps on the stairs. I closed my eyes, pretending I was asleep. My brother entered the room and walked to my bed. I held my breath and willed my eyelids not to flutter. His hand reached over to turn off the light. Then he turned and left, his footfalls receding down the stairs. The light was on again before his last footfall faded. 5 more minutes of purple paint. I noticed a spider in the far corner making its way unerringly toward me. Another set of footsteps on the stairs. I switched off the light and waited. I realized with sudden clarity the footsteps were my father's. I closed my eyes against the reprimand I was sure was coming. When his footsteps paused by the door, I could imagine him framed in the doorway of the room. I waited for the words. It could only mean trouble. Perhaps there would be no more light. Mother had told me I should turn it off, but no words came, only the sound of footsteps lighter than before as he found his way to my bed. Then the bedsprings howled their torment as they took his weight. I pretended to be asleep, my eyes glued shut. Then I felt the warmth and gentleness of his calloused, work-worn hand as he caressed my face. I opened my eyes and saw above me his full and ruddy cheeks, over which his eyes glowed. I saw only love and caring and understanding, and my own eyes brimmed full of tears as he pulled me to him. With my head cuddled on his chest and his arms wrapped around me, my fears temporarily fell away. Sensing he would listen and not condemn, I poured out my garbled fears. I talked, and he explained and counseled and assuaged my fears. We talked of mountain lions, purple walls, trees scratching against the window, and strange creatures that issued from the pond below. We talked of the wind as it crept through the cracks around the window panes, of spiders, night, and bedsprings that creaked. I told him every fearful thought. Finally, when I could find nothing more, when every last fear had been dredged up, he taught me the friendship of the night. He talked with me about the night sounds of the things I loved during the day. He talked of how the lengthening shadows brought peace and needed rest to all living things, land, creatures, and people. He taught me of living with the night, not in it. He taught me listen to the leaves talking to each other outside my bedroom window, the wind whipping around the corner of the house, gushing through my window. And he spoke to me of Heavenly Father, who breathes life and meaning into everything, and who cares for me too. My Father gave me these gifts and more, His love. The purple walls rested now, and moonlight glistened off them. The springs of my bed softly sang to each other. As the spider searched for its own resting place, I found the peace to sleep, just as my father wanted for me. I am a grown woman now, with children of my own. The night and I still share the friendship found long ago in the circle of my father's arms. Note, Diana Bateman Parker serves as young woman president in the Brookshire Ward, Banyan, Utah, East Stake. End of note. Papa, Do You Know Who I Am? By Raymond L. Mayo. The last time I saw my father alive, he lay dying in a veterans hospital where he'd been taken for surgery. The family had been called in, and I had come back from the West Coast to the Deep South, to the Little Depression-era home where I had been raised with my sister and two brothers, to the home where the missionaries had found my mother shelling peas under the huge chinaberry tree in the backyard and introduced her to the gospel. Shortly after Mother's baptism, the rest of the family had also been baptized. When I arrived at the hospital, I found my father withered with age, racked with pain, and unconscious from medication. He looked so small and frail. Born in the old country before the turn of the century, he was brought to the United States as a child. His parents died shortly after their arrival, and having nowhere to turn, he took to the streets at age 12. He traveled widely as a young man until he met and married a young orphan girl in Arkansas who became our mother. After bidding my dying father goodbye, I wondered if he would respond, calling me by name. In the summertime, he would leave the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, walking to his shop a mile away to make the necessary preparations to have it open for customers by 8 o'clock sharp. I slept by an open window at the back of the house and would often hear Papa leave by the back door. He would pause by the fig tree and pick and eat his breakfast on the spot. Often, he stopped to admire his little garden and even pulled a weed or two before going on to work. When he returned in the evening, he would often go straight to his garden to take advantage of what little sunlight remained. We would let Mother know that Papa was home. By the time the dusk settled over the garden, supper would be on the table. Supper time was our best family time together. Our family was our world. Peace, comfort, and security, if not abundance, reigned supreme. It was during that special hour each evening that we would talk. Papa had nicknames for each of us. No one recalls how it came about that he called me Doji, but I was stuck with it until about that time I started school. Later, after I was grown and returned home for a visit, he would sometimes reminisce. "What did we used to call him, Mother?" "Doji, that's it, Doji." He did not like to talk about himself. "Son," he would say, "that was a long time ago, and times were hard. Just be grateful you have a papa and a mama to teach you right from wrong." Still, we would press him to tell us how he came to this country and how he had survived all alone during his teen years. He would talk of 12-hour days in the mills of Boston, earning $3.15 a week. $2.50 a week bought his tiny room. We would ask him about the Great War and the trenches of France, the land of his birth. He would tell us stories that were both fascinating and frightening, and then he would show us his medals and prizes, a picture of him in uniform marching with his comrades into Paris. It was as if his suffering had made the experience and memory sacred. To me, he seemed sanctified by the ordeal. It seemed we could do nothing in our little town without his knowing about it. If we had been careless and run in front of a car or picked someone's green peaches across town, he would have a comment about it at the supper table. We had a name, a reputation to live up to. As I looked at my father in the hospital bed, I was not prepared for what I saw. His brown eyes had always been so alive and piercing, I could never lie to those eyes nor fool them. They had been calm, knowing, and understanding. Now they seemed bewildered. Mostly he slept. My older brother had arrived first and chatted with him briefly during one of his more lucid moments. I sat watching him and waiting for my chance to greet him and let him know that I had come. When a nurse came in to awaken him, I leaned over, kissed him, and said, "Hello, Papa." He gave me no special recognition, but in his usual way merely said, "I should not have gone to so much trouble to come." Then he called me by my brother's name and drifted off to sleep again. The scriptures say that the Lord knows his sheep and will call each one by name. John chapter 10. The impact of that thought never found home in me until my own earthly father failed to recognize me and call me by name. Later, my younger brother arrived, and as circumstances would have it, he walked into the room and directly over to the bed as Dad roused a little. Dad took his hand and called him by name and said how pleased he was to see him, but that he should not have bothered to come so far. During the rest of the day, we sat and watched and waited. The doctor gave us no hope, but he said death could still be weeks away. We each had our turn to comfort, soothe, or get Dad a drink of water. Occasionally, he would rouse and say, "Thank you, son." After a few days, I was satisfied that there was nothing more I could do. If death were not imminent, I had to get back to my own family. I comforted my mother and prepared to leave. Finally, I shared my concern with her. Dad had not called me by name. I was not sure he even knew I was there. He had always been there when I needed him, and it was important to me that he know that I was there when he needed me. Mother and I approached the bed and waited until Dad began to show a little sign of recognition. I bent over, kissed him goodbye, and said, "Papa, I love you. I'm going now, but remember that I love you." He nodded a little but said nothing. "Papa, do you know who I am?" "Who am I, Papa? If you know me, say my name." For a brief instant, I saw that old sparkle again in his brown eyes. "Mother," he whispered, "what did we used to call him?" "Doji. That's it. Doji." He settled back, and unconsciousness took over. I left for home. Not long after, I came back to dedicate his grave. Even now, when I return to that spot, I remember that he kissed me and called me by my name. "And he calleth his own sheep by name. He goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice." John chapter 10, verses 3 and 4. Gospel topics: childhood, fathers, love. Note: Raymond L. Mayo serves as High Priest Group Instructor in the Midway 3rd Ward, Midway, Utah State. End of note. End of the articles, A Father's Influence.